Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
Hey, from sunny Los Angeles, a big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Network. Yes, folks, I am the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing, that's right, called caregiver burnout. Oh, boy, that's tough. That's tough to have caregiver burnout. So we're trying to avoid caregiver burnout. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. And today we will be interviewing Sharon Brubaker, who's a certified grief recovery specialist. And if that wasn't enough, she's also a certified life coach with her place, A Time to Grieve, which is the premier center for grief and loss here in Santa Clarita Valley in Southern California. So stay tuned. You will not want to miss this show. If you have anybody who needs to hear this, call them up. Hey, if you're new to the show, and we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone to video, I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are very caring, and they're very selfless, and they're very sacrificial, very compassionate, all these wonderful things. Oh, yeah, they are also very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Sound familiar? You know, and caregivers are exactly the same way. So like the airline tells us, in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first because, you know, you have to help you. If you think you have to help your loved one with their mask, you're going to be in trouble because you need to take care of your needs first, and the airlines know this so well, because if you don't put your needs above them, then you will most likely black out, and you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. And we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. It kind of throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there's only one way out of the grief process, and I'm sure my guests will agree. You have to go through the grief process. You can't go around it, can't go over it, can't go under it. You got to go through it. Sorry. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're kind of stuck. Hey, I want to thank my last week's guest, Arlene Mickley. We spoke about no longer a caregiver when that time is over, and talk about grief. A lot of people go into grief when that happens. So just a reminder, you can hear that interview and all these interviews that we do, including today's, at my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S, caregiver without an S. .com. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And just for doing that, I'm going to send you my very first book absolutely free through ebook format. What a deal. All right, enough of that. Sharon, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today. I really appreciate it. Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? Just who is Sharon Brubaker?
Hey, Dave, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm really excited to be here today. Cool. I'm Sharon Brubaker. I've been in Santa Clarita for over 30 years. I have been teaching grief recovery for the past 10 years. After the tragic death of my then 10-year-old nephew, Austin, he drowned in Lake Havasu suddenly from carbon monoxide poisoning. Thank you. My sister and I tried to navigate our way through this and try to figure out exactly what would be the best thing to help us with our pain. And we ended up in a grief support group. And that one didn't work, so she tried another. And I was the strong person, so I was trying to help her find the right fit. And about the fifth group, she called me and asked me not to help her any longer. there was a gentleman in the group who'd been in her group, this group, for 33 years, and she called me on the phone, and she was actually crying, and she said, I can't be here in this position 33 years from now. There has to be something out there. And lo and behold, about 8 months later, I stumbled upon the Grief Recovery Method, and I signed her up and myself up, and we took the class. And by the end of 8 weeks, we were complete. I was complete with my relationship with Austin, all the things I needed to say to him that I never got a chance to say because he was taken away from us so early. I also knew one other thing. I needed to help every other griever that was out there and help them, just like you said, on their journey. I actually feel like I am with them on their journey, helping to facilitate to the other side. You do have to go through it.
So you came up with this method together, huh? And nothing else is like it around?
No, there is. The Grief Recovery Institute is in Sherman Oaks, California. Okay. The book was actually written by John James and Russell Friedman. They actually teach their program, and their main goal is to get education on grief out to everyone in America, because we're never taught how to grieve. We're taught in school how to write a check, how to open a checkbook, how to do math. But that one most important time of our life, a grieving and the process of grieving, we're not taught that. And so I actually trained with John and Russell and became certified under their program. And that's how I opened my business. And I go out and I actually teaching their grief recovery program.
Wow. And did I forget to introduce Adrian? Adrian, welcome to the show again. Thank you for taking the time to do this.
My pleasure.
So, Sharon, we're both going to ask you some questions. Let me start with, let's just go from real basic, because a lot of people don't even know what the grief process is. They don't even realize they're in it. And so let's just start with, what exactly is grief recovery and who needs it?
In my experience, I feel like everybody that I've met needs grief recovery.
And we're all grieving over something, huh?
We're all grieving over something. And here's the most amazing thing. We can grieve any relationship or any loss with living or a deceased person. You don't necessarily grieve just because the person has died. You also are grieving through the process, is what we're going to talk about today. But at the Grief Recovery Institute, we've come up with a very simple definition of grief, which is grief is the normal and natural reaction to a loss of any kind. It's normal and natural to grieve. What we're missing is the actual how to do it. We're actually missing how to do it. And one other surprising thing that I learned the first day of my class, and I think it really helps a lot of my students, is that tears aren't necessarily a sign of grief. You don't have to be bawling and crying to be grieving. And I can prove it to anyone by simply stating, you've lost your loved one. He's no longer here. You're out in the grocery store doing what your chores that you have to do. Your heart is absolutely broken, but you're not necessarily crying because you're trying to get your chores done. And so we know that tears aren't a sign of grief, which is really cool and helps people understand that.
Many people internalize that grief, right?
Exactly. They internalize the grief. The other thing that's really important for people to understand is that grief is a broken heart. It's not about your broken head. So all the tools out there so far have been to help people fix their head, when in actuality, you have an actual hole in your heart. When Austin died, I felt as if a knife had been inserted into my heart, and that I was walking around with this knife sticking around and going about my day. Through grief recovery, I'm able to remove the knife. The hole's still there because I always have that place where I miss him, but I'm able to move on. And that's what's really cool about grief recovery.
Wow. So how exactly does one move from grief, or in our case, you know, caregiver burnout, to a richer and more rewarding life? I mean, is it a simple process?
It is a simple process. Sometimes it can be tough. What happens with grief is that if we have other losses, we know for a fact there are 43 known losses that a person can experience over their lifetime. And just to name a few.
43?
Yes, there are 43 known losses.
Oh my gosh, I'd love to see that list.
And although we know that death and divorce are the top two that people think of, or a breakup of a romantic relationship, As far as caregivers go, there are quite a few on the list that just particularly go to their type of loving job that they do. But loss of someone's health, moving. When you're finished your job, you've got to move to the next job. And just that moving location, your drive might be further. That's an actual loss. Losing a friend or family member. And I think about the caregivers that I've worked with, they fall in love with the family. The grandchildren become their grandchildren. They're also in love with these children as well. And they're losing that whole family when they go to the next family in some situations. Looking for a new job absolutely is as a loss or a grief. Not finding a job, going for a long period without a new job. Change in the health of a family member. So every time that person drops to a new level, that's a new grief. Let's say, for example, if your patient is, you know, with Alzheimer's or dementia, every time they drop to a new low, you miss your old friend. And change in responsibility at work. So those are many, many areas that a person can grieve over just their job, just in that area.
Wow. It's interesting, huh, Adrian?
Yes.
Okay, I want to make sure you're still with us.
I'm here.
We should explain that Adrian needs to upgrade her Skype, and that's why we only have a picture of her, but she looks just like that. So
it's just so that my mouth moves.
She's not stiff. She's not moving for a reason. So, Sharon, have you found that in dealing with caregivers specifically that their form of grief shares a common type of pain as opposed to, you know, other people who are grieving? Something special about a caregiver?
I think sometimes what happened to me most recently was a caregiver didn't realize that she absolutely had fell in love with her client. And it was an older woman, and they were friends. They were friends. They sat and they talked. And she was so surprised at the amount of grieving that she did that her passing came suddenly. Mm-hmm. So in that aspect, I find that a broken heart is a broken heart. It just is. Mm-hmm. And what's also painful with it is if we don't deal with the end of that relationship and complete that relationship. And when I say complete a relationship, grief most times are the undelivered communication of an emotional nature. What I mean by that is everything that you need to say to my patient, Mrs. Smith, thank you so much for allowing me on this short journey with you. Thank you so much for allowing me to be here with you. Thank you for opening your home and letting me come in. Thank you for all the long talks we've had. There are a lot of things that people need to say to complete their relationship. We don't necessarily use the word closure. We use the word complete. And that is almost always, like I said, of communication with an emotional attachment to it. I don't think I answered your other question, though, also. How do we go through the process? Grief recovery is an 8-week educational program or a 4-day intensive program where we actually are giving each student the tools that they need to do the action steps to move them to completeness. So the time that it takes, it's really up to them. Sometimes they can't get it done in 8 weeks because it is so emotional. So it's really up to each student.
You know, my mom had Alzheimer's and she passed away about a year ago. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Sorry.
And so she was hanging on and hanging on. And my cousin, who's a therapist, told me, you know, Dave, sometimes people hang on because they've got some unfinished business to do. And she has a nephew whose the relationship was estranged because, you know, he's into drugs and stuff. And on again, off again. And so I immediately thought of my cousin, Dan. And so I called him up and we went down there and visited with her. And they had a great visit. You know, they discussed things that needed discussed.
Yeah.
And that night she passed away.
Yeah.
Before that, she was hanging on and hanging on and hanging. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's very... you know, that whatever you have inside of you, get it out, because when that day comes, you're going to grieve a lot harder.
Absolutely.
So it's great advice. Any comments, Adrian?
I I found that people that I've known have needed permission. You know, they've needed, we'll be fine, don't worry. We just want you to be out of pain. You know, it's letting, like with Steve's, my late husband's mother, it was, she hung on, and we couldn't understand why. And it was because she was waiting to hear that the boys were okay if she left. And she needed to hear that. And as soon as she did, it was a matter of hours.
Wow. So say your thank yous, say your I love yous today, not at the funeral.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I, my father passed away 3 years ago. And so we went through a hospice situation. But because I am a grief recovery specialist, I know for a fact, I share this story often, that I had a conversation. I didn't grow up in a home where we said, I love you a lot. And I knew, one, that I was going to grieve him after he passed, but I also knew that there were things I wanted to tell him. And so I was able to start a conversation with him, which led all of my brothers and sisters to do the same. And it was one of the most memorable nights of our lives, just sitting there having that conversation and thanking him for being on this journey with us and thanking him for being our dad. And it was really cool. And you're so right, Dave. If we don't get that chance, it just is what gets stuck in our heart, a lot of it.
So getting back to caregivers, you know, a lot of caregivers don't realize, those who understand the grief process, they know their loved one's going through grief,
right?
Loss, but they would never consider that they are going through grief. With a third of the population caregivers, I'm assuming you've had some caregiver clients.
Yes.
So I know there are certain things that caregivers experience, like a loss of freedom. That's a real griefer, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what I didn't realize I was going through the grief process when I realized, wow, you know, I'm kind of not free anymore. I can't just leave and go anywhere I want and
right.
care for my wife. So what, besides freedom, what other things do caregivers grieve about that they may not even realize they're grieving about?
And right on that, tagging onto that loss of freedom, it's also the change, a change of any kind, right? So not being able to have that life that you had before, where you're actually have the freedom to move around, for sure, I think is definitely the new life, looking at the new life, looking at the person differently. Say it again.
The new normal.
The new normal, yeah. So, and going along with the what I said earlier, every time they drop to the new normal, that's our new life. And there's always these surprises that come in there. I think the biggest part is just being open to working on that relationship, working on the communication as the time goes on, and being open with that part of your life. The great thing about grief recovery is once you've learned the steps and the techniques to use, you can do it anytime, anywhere, and you can continue to grieve as the process is going on. There's also, along with the 43 losses that a person can experience, there's also a few that are intangible as well. A loss of trust, a loss of safety, loss of control, loss of faith, actually, which is really huge. Not all the time, but it's absolutely there. And loss of fertility are some of the intangible ones. And so I think that what people aren't expecting sometimes is that their spiritual walk is actually shaken. And that becomes a surprise to them sometimes. Sure. And that's something we work through. Our program is not a religious program. We don't pray before, after, or during. And we allow each person to decide where they are with that walk.
Now, you know, I know there's a stress scale. They say, like, if you're getting married, that's stress. If you're moving, that's stress. If you're going through a bankruptcy or a divorce, or, you know, the list is really, really long. Is stress kind of related to grief and loss?
Absolutely, it's related to grief and loss. I actually have people that come to me just because their stress level is so high. Mm. What happens, Dave, is when we don't complete these relationships and these losses, whatever they may be, even especially for the caregivers, everything from the past, will attach itself to that major loss. And so it makes it so much bigger because they have all of this junk. That's all I can call it. It's just junk that's been in there for years and years and years building up. And through doing your grieving steps, you're able to clean that out. So you're literally just left with a portion that needs to be worked on. Some of the responses to grief can be reduced concentration, sense of numbness, disruptive sleep patterns, change in eating habits, roller coaster of emotions, increase in drinking alcohol to ease the pain, watching television, isolating. There's so many things that a griever will do just to ease the pain, just to get a little bit of that stress off of them. We call them STIRBs, short-term energy relieving behaviors. And the thing about STIRBs that's so cool is that they absolutely work. The thing about STIRBs that are not so cool is that they only work for a very short time.
Well, cool. Maybe toward the end of the show, you can share some of these little secrets and tips. And if someone's in New York or Florida or Canada, can they still take advantage of your process, even though they're not local?
Yes. There are grief recovery specialists all over the United States, and they absolutely can take process. The book is sold everywhere. You can go on the Grief Recovery Institute and put in your zip code, and they will give you the grievers that are near you and in your area, and they can help you through that process, which is great. Mm-hmm. You can purchase the book yourself on Amazon. You will need a partner to walk through the program with you, and they show you in Chapter 7 exactly how to do that if you're in a country and there are no grief recovery specialists there. The one thing we don't do is we do not do it over Skype because we need to be there and be within touching distance and hugging distance in case a hug is needed.
Yes, those hugs are very important, aren't they, Adrienne?
Very important.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, this is a good time to take a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take The Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you and ultimately an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with our guests, Sharon Brubaker, and our co-host, Adrienne Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nassani. And, you know, I wanted to show off my new hat that is kind of, I look like Brian Wilson, right? An old
Love
Brian
it.
Wilson from the Beach Boys. But
oh, yeah.
Some people think it clashes with my shirt, but other people say, no, David, if anybody can get away with that, you can. But I won't wear it because it covers my eyes with the shadow here. So you two are okay with that?
I can't see you.
Oh.
Oh. It's a nice hat, Andrea.
Thank you.
Adrian, you can't see me?
No.
Really? I didn't know that. What do you see? My picture?
I just have a picture of you up here.
Which picture is it?
It's half you and half Rockstar. It's just the circle with you and...
Well, Rockstar is Ed. Well, we'll fix that. You're going to get upgraded next time. But we can see you.
Yes.
So, Sharon, how successful are your therapies in getting people to rebuild their life? I mean, you know, what percentage of success? And how do you define success? I mean, isn't that subjective for grievers or no?
I think, how do I define success? The program is very successful. It always works. It always works if you trust the process and you really, we go over some commitments every week. And the very first commitment is total honesty. Mm-hmm. Always tell the truth about yourself.
It's hard for some people, isn't it?
It's very hard for some people. And it's not something you have to share. You don't have to share every ugly part of your story with me. That's not important. What's important is that you in your heart and soul know that something be true. Mm-hmm. If someone puts in 100% and they literally work it and follow the program and they trust the process, it absolutely will work. I recently completed grief recovery with a gentleman that had been in therapy for 5 years. He was told that he had post-traumatic stress, and he had quite a few relationships to work on, starting with a father. And that process was amazing, just to see him. And we were not able to do it in 8 weeks. That's why I say sometimes it's not 8 weeks. I had to give him time in between and some space to do what he needed to do. But it changed his life. It literally has changed his life. I see it over and over and over again. When I say if you trust the process and put in 100%, I have worked with people that for one reason or another, they're just not ready. They're not ready to let go of the hurt and pain of the past, and they really want to hold on to it. And so they have to come back at a later date to complete, and it does happen. But it really is up to the person.
That's interesting. You know, the old expression, misery loves company. Mm-hmm. Why would somebody want to hang on to pain? I mean, is it like the devil you know versus the devil you don't know? What's going on in their minds?
For me, I can tell you about myself. When Austin died and he was taken suddenly, right? He drowned in Lake Havasu. The pain was all I had left. I didn't have a nephew anymore. A nephew that I was there moments after he was born. I'm 10 years older than my sister, Erica. And so she and I have sort of a mother-daughter relationship. And so I was there moments after he was born. I helped her, you know, with the breastfeeding and everything she had to do. And we're very, very close family. So here I had this nephew that I took places with me. He's in love with my husband and the horses. He loved horses. My husband has horses, so he'd be around the horses. When he was gone suddenly and taken from me, all I had left was the pain. And I was afraid to go through the grieving process because I thought, if I lose this pain in my heart, I'm not going to have him anymore. And what actually happens is that you are left with so much more. I was left with fond memories. And those fond memories weren't painful to think about. I can look at Austin's picture and talk about him. I can share his story with everyone. And my heart is just not broken. And I absolutely miss him. And I will miss him until I see him again. But the pain was comforting and it felt good. That's my own personal.
So what are some examples of bad attitudes that would make someone not respond to therapy that you've seen?
Someone not ready to forgive the person for a wrong, not ready to forgive. However, forgiving is, even though it is a major portion, we have other ways of going about it without saying forgiving.
Let me interrupt. Do you ever tell someone that unforgiveness is like drinking poison and hoping the other person will die?
No.
That's my favorite line.
We actually say that recovery is an inside job. Dave, so my recovering from Austin was my work to do. Erica had to do her own work. She was the mother who lost a son. I was an aunt who lost a nephew. So my heart was so much different than hers. We don't understand what another person is going through. Even though we sat at my dad's bed the day that, you know, he died, there were five children there. We all lost a different dad. I'm the oldest child. I did most of that caregiving, arranged the hospice, arranged the caregivers to come in. I was that child. Erica, 10 years younger, was the baby girl. She was the apple of his eye, could do no wrong. And so she lost that dad. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So sometimes people just aren't ready to forgive. They aren't willing to let go. I find this a couple of times with a breakup of a romantic relationship where people just, you know, the breakup is being forced on them or the divorce, and they're just not ready to give up on it.
Yeah, as back to a breakup, you know, one of the stages of grief is bargaining. And that takes on different, you know, either bargaining with God, but with a romantic breakup, it's the classic definition of bargaining is, well, can we still be friends, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's yes and sometimes it's no, but that's just an attempt to grasp on to what they think they're losing, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Just going back to the stages of grief real quick, we also don't teach the stages of grief. Grief can take on many forms.
No.
For example, I was absolutely not in denial that my father had passed away. I missed him, but I wasn't in denial that he was gone. I was there. So it is not, we teach it, we explain it, but we also insert it in our program as the stages that more the dying person goes through as they're taking their journey.
Mm. So is therapy forever for some people, that it just never ends? I mean, I knew a woman one time who was an emotional overeater, and she went through a divorce, and she could eat a gallon of ice cream right before your eyes. And of course, she got big.
Right.
And so it was suggested to her by her therapist that, you know, you're trying to protect yourself from the pain, because if you eat a gallon of ice cream, even if it's subconsciously, you're going to get large. And if you're large, it's not likely that men will give you a look to start a relationship. What about all that?
So that's what we call sturbing. So she's absolutely sturbing. Short-term energy relieving behaviors, right?
Yes. I'm sorry. One thing I forgot to add is that she's been in therapy forever.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, how long does it take? My gosh.
Yes, because the tool for the job is not to work on the head. The tool for the job is to work on the heart. So if I came to you, Dave, and I said, here's a bucket and here's a hammer, I want you to come to my house and paint my house blue, but all you have is a bucket and a hammer, how would you do that?
It's very messy.
Yes, you would not be able to do it, correct. Because the tools that we have been given such far have been to fix the head. Grief recovery is about repairing the heart, repairing the broken heart. So, for example, I don't know your friend, but I would think some of the things that she would need to grieve is the breakup of that romantic relationship, the loss of the love, and sometimes they're very simple things. I loved waking up next to him every morning, and I don't have that anymore. You know, just some of those things. And that's what, when we can't say them or express them, we start eating the ice cream.
So maybe she didn't grieve properly. Maybe she was never taught to grieve properly.
My experience, going back to your other question about therapy, is that people that go through grief recovery recover a lot faster because they are actually doing the steps to move them beyond the pain.
Mm. So this is revolutionary. I mean, for a long time, the Keebler stages of grief was like the gold standard. And now you're like saying, no, maybe there's a better way. How long has this revolutionary idea been around?
So grief recovery has been around for 30 years. John James.
Which isn't long in psychological years.
No, not at all. Not at all. He lost a son. And he knew there had to be another way to deal with this pain. And the advice that he was given, we talk about the six myths where people will tell you, just give it time. You'll feel better. Just give it some time. Don't feel bad. When in actuality, his heart was absolutely breaking and he knew, be strong. You have to be strong for your wife. And here he's thinking, how can I be strong for her? I need someone to be strong for me. How do I get past this? And he just knew there had to be a different way. As far as the stages go, my own personal experience have been, I absolutely bought into the stages 100%, that they were the stages. And Erica, my sister, every day I would talk to her after Austin's death. And every day we were trying to make the stages fit. And we couldn't get them to fit, even though we tried. And my sister's a social worker. And so I would ask her, well, how are you today? And she would say, well, I think I'm in bargaining. Really? What does that feel like? And we tried every which way to make these puzzle pieces fit, and they just didn't fit. And so we learned through the Grief Recovery Institute that the stages of grief are not actually what the griever will experience at times.
Adrienne, what are your feelings on that?
Well, I'm familiar with the program, and I have the book. It's not just that it's revolutionary, it's very sane. And if you do the steps, it's almost like having someone hold your hand through the process. And it's a wonderful experience, really. I was very pleased that I was sort of doing it myself without the book. So I was, the confirmation was great, but the Grief Recovery Institute they do great work.
Also,
absolutely.
I didn't know you had firsthand experience, Adrienne.
Yeah. I didn't either.
So are you over your grief, or do you ever get over your grief? That's a question for either one of you.
Me? I'll very quickly, I will grieve Steve at times and just know that it's only there for a moment. That's going to go and go back to the good memories and the life we had together. And know that we grieved together also, and that was a different stage of it. But we tried to be very healthy about it and practical but smart. I still grieve, but certainly not all the time.
Yeah. I think for me, we're a family that can talk about Austin. There's moments that, you know, we really miss him. We don't know what he would be like today, you know? What type of young man would he be? You know, definitely. Also getting on that same subject, in July of last year, I lost a 21-year-old nephew on a motorcycle accident. And because I do my grieving process throughout my life and over time, I grieve many areas of my life. When Donovan passed away, I just grieved Donovan, and it was pure. It was so pure and so beautiful that I was able to complete a relationship with Donovan, but I had the tools to do it, and I absolutely didn't fall apart. And I thank the universe every day that I had this option and know exactly what I needed to do. So, yeah, we grieve it often.
You know, last week's guest, Arlene Mickley, her husband died. He was a nonverbal stroke survivor. And we were talking about grief, and especially the grief of no longer being a caregiver. And Adrienne, of course, her husband died. And both of these women have started dating again after a period of time. And that is a successful thing, right? That's after the grief, you're moving on. I mean, how many people don't ever get to that point where they just, no, I could never date another person. You know, there's only one man in my heart or whatever. I mean, is that common, especially caregivers?
Oh yeah. I think it's common because we also never say never, right? Because we'll be surprised by ourselves at time. And I think also, you may or may not agree with me. Once we can get over the grieving part, and that part of our heart is really mend, we're open to new ideas, you know? Also goes back to, I don't know, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, what conversations you actually had with him before he was gone, and you know, whether you, in a spiritual sense, were given that permission to move on, whether he wanted it. And you do have to have a time of healing. You do have to have that time of grieving and healing and putting it all in perspective. So, yeah.
What is the quickest you've ever seen someone recover from the loss of a spouse and then, like, date or even marry? I mean, I think I've seen one guy get married within a year. Is that too soon? Or is there no definition on you know, how long or how short it should take?
Well, I many years ago worked with a young woman that her husband died suddenly. And I worked with her, not in a class setting, but in a one-on-one situation. And they were a very young couple, and she remarried within 7 months. But she was complete with her relationship with him, and she had small children, and got some kind of way got in touch with a high school sweetheart, and they remarried, and they're still married to this day. So yes, it absolutely does happen.
And she had your blessings. You didn't warn her. You say, hey, yeah, you know. Red flag, danger, Will right. Robinson.
And stuff can still come up from the husband, you know, absolutely. You know, you can remember stories, things can come up, or you just have this, you feel the tug at your heart if it's still there. Every time you think about it, you can feel it in your heart. And you know that's an area that you probably need to work on.
So the bottom line is, grief is not a death sentence. We can get past this. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
No need to get depressed or be suicidal. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Just hang in there and do your homework.
And, you know, when you embark on that doorway of going through the journey, like we first talked about when the show first opened, it's dark thinking, looking down that tunnel. But the light is at the other end of it. And that's why you need
it. It's not a train.
No. The light is at the other end, and the freedom and the recovery is at the other end. And it's dark and it's scary.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to take another break. So when we get back, I'd like to talk about, you know, some of these methods that maybe some of our listeners can actually start using immediately, you know, take home, and then we'll let them know how to get a hold of you. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive. To survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmonelegonehundredwords.com. and Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Sharon Brubaker and Adrian Gruberg, and I'm Dave Nassani. And I want to spend the last 10 minutes of the show, it's gone so fast, talking about, you know, just giving us some things that we can try to whet our appetite and say, wow, this stuff really does work. How do I get a hold of Sharon and learn more? So tell us, Sharon, what can we do now, today, when the show's over, immediately start on these processes to start to heal?
I think one of the most important things that we need to know is that we should not grieve alone. Don't grieve alone. Try as much as possible not to isolate yourself. What happens, Dave, a lot of times is that the griever wants to talk and they want to feel like they've been listened to and that they've absolutely been heard. What happens in the world is that our friends and family have put a time limit on how long they're willing to hear about that, the grieving, broken heart. And so you'll see a situation where they'll go in and no matter what, you could be talking about the weather. And the griever will say, I really miss Tom. He loved taking walks at sunset. And we start to talk about our broken heart. And quickly, our friend or family member will say, yeah, but did you see the football game on Sunday? Because in their mind, the grieving process should be done. Or they just don't know how to help the griever. They don't know how to help the griever. So I would say, don't grieve alone. Most importantly, we teach in grief recovery is, if you can imagine a big, giant red heart, a big, giant red heart with two big ears hanging out the end. So it's a heart with ears. That's what you need to be for the grieving person, and you need to allow them just to talk, because sometimes we need to just understand and accept that our loved one is gone, and talking about them does start to help. Be open to listening to them and listening to them talk. Don't grieve alone and talk about the grief as much as possible. It does help. Also, getting your hand on the book is the number one thing. And getting to a grief program will really help you to move beyond the pain of the loss. It will really help you to move beyond that pain. So I think those are some of the most important things. Be honest. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. And if you need to cry, you just cry. That's what it is. You know, it's an emotional loss. So if you need to go there, you have to have the space to do that.
Yeah, just like Alcoholics Anonymous says, don't drink alone. That's a red flag. You're saying don't grieve alone. That's a red flag.
And, you know, grief is individual and unique to each and every person. So the processes that they're going to go through and start the grieving process is going to be unique to each and every person. There's no absolutes in grief. I can't tell you that it's only going to take 8 weeks. I can't tell you it'll be done in a year. Everybody is different in the way they accept this process, but by not grieving and stuffing it and keeping it down, it starts to affect other areas in our life. So the soonest, the earliest that a person can get in and start to work on their grief, the better it's going to be for them.
Mm-hmm. So Adrian, you read this book, right?
Yes.
So what did you learn just by reading the book, and was it immediate?
What did I learn? I mean, Sharon's given us a very good explanation of what it's about. Don't grieve alone. Don't isolate. At one point, I had thought that I should join a grief support group. And then it was like, why? I don't need a grief support group. I'm successfully grieving. And the grief support groups that I had seen other people involved with had kept them too busy. They wanted to make sure that they were busy all the time and sort of push the grieving aside. And I just wanted to grieve and do it my way. And it's not a matter of getting it over with. It's just a process. and I got to a certain point in the process. Very, very good.
So, Sharon, you agree with that, obviously. I see you nodding your head.
I absolutely agree with it. We, you know, there are 13 million grievers annually due to death.
Wow.
There are 2.6 million deaths per year in the United States, with an average of 5 grievers per death. There's so much grief out there. And if we just stuck everyone in a room and said, just talk about your loved one week after week, just going there, you're simply going to get stuck in that grief and you're not going to be able to move on. Time does not heal. Action within time is what heals. And being able to do those action steps to move you beyond it is what really makes a difference. And I love that she knows the Grief Recovery Institute. Yeah. She was able to use that process.
Yes, Adrienne is very wise. So I'm learning a lot here because, you know, I used to preach, you know, the grief process and support groups, and now I'm hearing that maybe there's a better way besides, you know, the 5 stages of grief, and maybe there's another way besides support groups. Tell me what you mentioned in the beginning, you know, that the support groups, you went to 5 different grief support groups and they just didn't fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you ever recommend a support group? What good will a support group do and what good will it not do and they should go somewhere else?
I recommend the Grief Recovery Support Group. We call it the Grief Recovery Support Group. Mm-hmm. Something happens in that group when everyone is in that room and they have a broken heart. The support that comes from that, just the energy in the room is amazing. It's so much different than if I'm working with someone one-on-one. For example, I may have a class of 6 people. The energy that comes from that. Now, each person in that room could be grieving someone who's passed or still living, different stages, but the energy of supporting each other is absolutely essential and helping. It definitely does help.
Sometimes you do recommend they seek out
right,
a support.
But what doesn't happen in a grief recovery support group is we're not going around the room and everyone is just telling their story week after week, the same story over and over again. Discussing what parts they actually miss of their loved one. They're actually giving actual homework assignments that they have to complete and reading a book. So they're doing the actions to move beyond it. Mm-hmm. But I love the energy in the grief recovery support group.
Mm-hmm. So like Adrienne discussed, they were giving her distractions, be busy. Is that good or is that not good? Is it good to be busy or does that take away from the grieving time?
It takes away from the grieving time 100% because I can be so busy and never come back to actually grieving. And we, a lot of times people are misdiagnosed when they're actually grieving. So they're diagnosed with post-traumatic stress or ADHD or depression. And they're given medication because that works on the head, right? Not the heart. They're given medication. So sadly, they are misdiagnosed and mistreated because of that actual grieving process that they can be going through. Keeping busy is just going, it's just going to be doing that. It's just going to be keeping busy. And I know this for a fact because I'm the queen of keeping busy. That was the one way that I was going to deal with my loss of Austin is I was going to absolutely keep busy. So.
Now they say, whoever they is, that you should cry. And so many people after a loss, whatever the loss is, you know, 2-3 years, they've never shed a tear. Yeah. And I'm assuming that's not good. Is it necessarily not good?
It's neither good nor bad. Right. Each person is going to grieve in their own way. And sometimes tears are not necessarily a sign of grief. Mm. However, what I find is that some people want the tears. They feel that they really need these tears to help them through the process. And I've actually worked with people that said, I can't cry. Because we pushed it down so deep, we can't actually attach it and kind of pull it up. So we work with them to go through step by step to touch that emotion that may or may not be tearful. So I can tell you absolutely without a doubt that after I lost Donovan last year, there weren't very many tears attached to it, but my heart was absolutely broken. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Will they eventually cry or not necessarily?
Not necessarily. Each person is different. Every person is different. Oh. Now, however, sometimes just thinking about the person doesn't bring tears, but actually talking about the person or saying it out loud, becoming verbal and really going there out loud is where the helps to bring those emotions up and where the tears are attached to.
Right. I love that example I use from time to time. It's the breakup, you know, and the woman, they've been together 5 years, engaged, and then he dumps her, and so she's grieving for a year, and then she finally gets over it. She finds a new beau, and she's in love, and she hardly even thinks of this guy anymore, and so they're engaged to be married. And then she runs into him randomly on the sidewalk, and they chat, and he says, oh, yeah, I'm getting married, you know, here's her picture, and all of a sudden she collapses.
Yeah.
And discovers that she didn't realize that she just thought he didn't want to get married, but now she realizes he didn't want to marry her. And so, you know, how's that different, that type of grief that seemed to go into hibernation for, you know, a couple of years?
That is not different. That is the definition of most grieving experiences. I think that's what happens most times, is that we absolutely don't slow down long enough to deal with our grief, and we move on to the very next thing, the very next relationship, the very next thing that's going to help our heart to feel better. And then a lot of times we come upon 5 years later that loved one, and we realize all the hurt and pain is still there. And it will attach itself to other things, not just that. It will attach itself to overeating, overdrinking. It will attach itself to other losses in our life, not consciously, but subconsciously. It will attach. Okay. It's always going to be there.
Well, listen, my engineer is warning me that our time is up and we have to go. So let's quickly get how we can contact you and how we can contact Adrian.
Okay. Sharon Brubaker at atimetogrief.com. Or Sharon at SharonBrubaker.com, or you can call me anytime at 661-212-0720. I teach grief recovery. I also teach when children grieve and grief recovery for pet loss, which is a huge loss that we didn't get to talk about. Thank you so much for having me. This has been
so enjoyable.
Much.
Adrian, how we get a hold of you?
Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at the caregiver space. .org. And the website's thecaregiverspace.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, and God bless you. We'll see you next Tuesday at noon Pacific time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific. Or catch the program anytime, 24/7, right here on Radio Star Worldwide.